Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Monday. Welcome to the Windup. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tilford. I love that. I love that energy, man. That's
he
great.
Loves it. He's got to bring it in. It's the start of the week. I was going to put a little tweet out because I've been playing a lot of Deathloop. So have you. And I thought maybe we'd do another Deathloop podcast. But we did do a couple previous ones, including the main show from last week was all about Deathloop. And so we might get back to it in the future, depending on whether or not it does the rounds a little bit more on social media. I feel like hardly anybody's talking about Deathloop. Don't know what your feed's like, but it's barely been anywhere for me.
Well, I feel like our feeds are very different. You know, I feel like as per being apparently very different people, I haven't seen many people talking about it, but it feels like to me, and I would love to be wrong, but it feels like another Arcane game that reviews really well and has a cult following, but isn't quite the mainstream smash that a lot of people want it to be. It reminds me a lot of, I said this before we started recording, it reminds me a lot of Returnal, where I love that game.
Yeah.
That got great reviews across the board, and then it just kind of fell off sales-wise, and it wasn't that much of a hit. And, you know, obviously, with this kind of like genre and with this specific niche of time loop games, maybe there's a ceiling on it. But yeah, it's certainly not been a Call of Duty level launch.
No, I guess it was never going to be that. I think there's a whole really valid conversation to have about how abysmal and weird the marketing's been. Like, there's been bits and pieces that you could pick up, but like the whole idea of like a rivalry against another character, and like, oh, they can be a player, they can also be another, like another real time person, or it can be AI. And like, I feel like they dropped the ball on every front in regards to what Deathloop is. And it's not that hard to describe. It's like this time loop assassination game. But anyway, because that seems to be kind of up in the air, we might come back to it going forward. We thought we'd just talk about the stuff that's coming out in the next week, because this next week is actually stupid for game releases. The amount of stuff that is rammed into the next literally 7 days.
It's crazy.
Is nothing short of ridiculous. So we're going to run some stuff down, including the thing that I continue to not believe, which is that Kena Bridge of Spirits is out tomorrow. The game that Sony themselves, Jim Ryan's just pushing out the door, doesn't even know what it is, just wants to get it out on the PlayStation Store. Whereas I feel like Kena Bridge of Spirits should be held up as, you know, one of the like last releases, reasons to get a PS5 for the rest of 2021. It was like part of why you were going to be invested in the PlayStation 5. And then it wasn't even a PlayStation showcase, and it's just like, what is going on with this game,
dude? I told you a few months ago, maybe it was on a podcast where maybe it was in a news, but we were talking about it somewhere, and I remember saying, you know, like, don't let your expectations get too high for this game. It might turn out really well, but you know, this is a kind of, it's a smaller project. It's not a full price title. It's an indie team that's been making it for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And you know, even though it was at those big Sony showcases, those PlayStation 5 showcases, it's always been a PlayStation 4 game as well. So feel like this might be a case of almost No Man's Sky, you know, almost No Man's Sky situation where the marketing is kind of like promised something. It's promised this massive game. And at least to me, and again, we'll find out tomorrow, the realities of the actual development of it, I don't think quite match that, or at least that's the vibe I'm getting.
No, I mean, well, first of all, I'll find out at midnight tonight, my friend. I'll be up until 2:30 in the morning. I need to know. But no, I mean, my problem is not that it is a cross-gen game. I don't care about that. My thing is just the marketing is just, it feels like a Concrete Genie, which is the game that Sony initially heavily advertised. And, oh my God, it's going to be a PlayStation exclusive. And then come the sort of week or two before launch day, there was nothing for it at all. And Concrete Genie is sort of one of those games that even now people don't really talk about or even know of or describe in detail or anything. And I feel like it's another one of them. And someone did the rounds yesterday, I forget the name of the dude, who was sharing this report from last year where someone looked into the development of the game, found out that it has actually been in development for, it's since about 2012, 2013-ish. And there's an ongoing sort of lawsuit between one of the creative directors, or at least one of the lead coders, who is trying to say that they were massively instrumental in getting the code from PC to the PlayStation 5 version. And that the trailers that we've been shown off more recently were actually from 2017. And this particular coder couldn't believe that they were being shown off as, oh my God, the latest, you know, PS5 style stuff. Right. And so that person said that as far as they were concerned, Kena, the overall game was pretty much on fire and shouldn't be seen by anybody. And they said it was they just couldn't believe that, because they'd since left Ember Labs, couldn't believe that the game had then been signed for a PlayStation 5 style, ad campaign. And they literally said they were crying over it, just saying, oh my God, I can't believe the actual state of the game, which would line up with the reality of, you know, the rubber hits the road and you need to release something to the PlayStation store. And then maybe there's very little there, but it's not like Sony have said, it's not like it's been pushed back anymore. It was initially delayed. But the 21st, release date tomorrow is the release date it landed on. So there must be something there. But I can't believe it wasn't a PlayStation showcase. And I can't believe how much Sony themselves aren't sharing any of the Kena official accounts, tweets. It just feels like it's this weird on the side thing. And the marketing is just abysmal.
It's funny, man. It's really funny how
I want to love it.
This game's coming out, because I want to love it too. But I mean, I kind of come down on it on a slightly different way than you. You know, ignoring that report, which is, you know, hugely incriminating if that turns out to be true. Like, all that stuff absolutely sucks. You know, in terms of Sony's marketing, for instance, for me, Kena was kind of everywhere. You know, when it
was
when it had the release date earlier this year, it was all over the place. You know, it was at all of these PlayStation 5 events, it was at all of these Sony State of Players and all of that stuff. And then it got pushed, and then it got pushed again. And now I feel like since it got pushed again, and it's now coming out, you know, tomorrow, September, that's when it's sort of gone radio silent. And now it's kind of strange.
There's no reviews or anything?
There's no reviews. That's very damning. I think that no one has a review copy is kind of worrying, because I can't remember the last time that even happened. You know, I feel like publishers have been really good at getting games out really early to, publications over the past, you know, year or year and a half or whatever. But yeah, it's now in this weird position where they had this massive marketing push, and maybe they only had an allotted amount of money for it, you know, thinking it was going to be out the earlier this year. And then they just kind of went like, look, we've spent a lot of money on this marketing push. We're not going to spend anymore because you keep pushing it. We can't keep keeping up with it. You know, we can't keep this level of drive to the marketing. Maybe that's partly the reason why. But yeah, certainly I'm going into tomorrow and for you midnight. And with tempered expectations, I hope it's good. It does look gorgeous. But yeah, you're right that where there's this kind of volatile cocktail of bad ingredients from the development to the marketing to the silence around it in general and the delays that make me a bit cautious.
I look at, like, I take a step back and I look at Sony overall. I just mentioned the Deathloop stuff, but it's like their two remaining big talking points around PS5 for the rest of this year. Deathloop, I guess you've got Ghostwire Tokyo. I think that's later this year, isn't it?
It got pushed to next year.
Right, yeah. So that was initially going to be this year. But yeah, in terms of the big talking points, like, okay, your casual friend says, should I get a PS5 and why? What's coming out that I need to play? It would be Deathloop and Kena, and I guess more so Deathloop in terms of an overall, maybe more mature audience or whatever. But neither of them had sizable, or like for me, like effective marketing campaigns. Kena's way worse than Deathloop, I would say. It feels like Kena's just not even on the radar anymore. But and in terms of the game itself, that is coming out tomorrow, Kena Bridge of Spirits. It's on PS4 and PS5 and seems to be like a Zelda style or like a PlayStation take on a Zelda formula, or at least it looks like that, like an over-shoulder style, lots of Z-targeting, lots of Ocarina style stuff. But they only really showed like two levels. Like, it's largely only been like one main core hub place. And then on one of the other sort of game dev diaries, they showed off one of the village places that you can go to. And you are playing as Kena and you look after these little creatures called the Rot. And it seems like you do like little lemming style puzzle bits with them. You send them in to do bits and pieces, kind of like Overlord, if you ever played Overlord on PS2.
I did
the Overlord. That was a good time. If they could channel that, I'm kind of in. but again, like, if that's a main component of the game, it's, where even is it? Like, we sort of know the little lads are in it and that's about it.
Well, again, this is all just, you know, perhaps fear-mongering speculation on my part. But the fact that it isn't a full price title and the fact that it has had all of these issues, to me, maybe indicates that it's going to be a very pretty game. You know, we've seen that. But maybe a straightforward and quite short game overall. Well, I guess, and I don't know whether it's even going to have that much to it from a gameplay perspective. Maybe
that was my
character spectacle than anything else.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry to talk all over you, Josh Brown. My fear though with it, my sort of underlying gut feeling is that it is the first video game from Ember Labs, who are only really known for this sort of like viral CG video they did that was based off Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask. They did like a fan film that was really gorgeously done, like beautiful stuff. And that's what the visuals of Kena look like, but it is their first video game, which kind of ties in with the lawsuit thing that I mentioned before, where there's like one sole coder reckons he was responsible for getting everything working on PlayStation, and that thing where it's a team's first game. They've not made a video game before at all, and like, yeah, it can look beautiful because that's what they do, but then an animation studio then needs to obviously follow it up with gameplay. But like you said, the reduced price point, the fact that they've only really shown like two biomes, if that, maybe it's only like a 2-3 hour game or something, and it'll just be, well, it looks beautiful but it's very short. In terms of other stuff though, because there is a lot to get through, the 23rd of September is Sable, the sort of open world, very Eastern looking. That game I played a bit of the demo when they put it on Xbox, but you've been well psyched for Sable a hell of a lot more than me.
Yeah, man, I feel like September for me, for the most part, at least in terms of the games I'm going to be playing that are new, or re-releases, I suppose we'll get to one of those as well. I'm looking for cozy games. I'm looking for some cozy times to usher October in with. And Sable, for me, has definitely been that one. If I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure there's no combat to it at all. It's all exploration and puzzle-driven. You're thrown into this really lush, you know, cel-shaded-esque open world, and I'm excited for it, man. Like, this is part of the reason why I got a Series X. Obviously, it's coming out on other Xbox consoles, but that was part of the reason why I wanted to get either an S or an X so soon. And I just hope it doesn't disappoint, because it looks incredibly chill. I haven't played the demo because I don't want anything spoiled, but I'm kind of just like, I know I'm going to get it, so I can just go in as fresh as possible. Out on the 23rd, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I do love the bike thing that you fly around on, and reminds me of what Rey has in Force Awakens. It sort of looks like a Magnum on its side, like a Magnum on the screen with an engine, and I like the idea of that. I love the whole art style too. Like, obviously it's very cel-shaded, but they also drop certain frames when you're running, so it almost looks like a flip boot kind of thing. And I thought that was like a really like a, effective sort of way to do that kind of stuff. And there's not that much to say in a preview sense. I thought that the actual gameplay, it definitely prioritized just open spaces, like you said, quite a chill environment, quite a chill sort of pace. You were in the demo bit, it was just a lot of fetch quests. It was just go talk to this guy, go request to find this thing, and then take your bike out and go back and forth and just sort of drink in the visuals. Lot of the like marketing for it has been like, look at how absolutely gorgeous this world is. So but I guess there's not that much to say, but it does look promising.
Yeah, totally. That's why I'm kind of so intrigued, because, you know, I've watched a little bit of the gameplay, like you said, you know, some of the places to explore, some of the characters to interact with, the bike, you know, to cover long distances in the world. But it's very much a kind of vibe game, I guess. That's right, my interest. You know, I like the way it looks. Totally. I like the fact that there's no combat. I like the fact that the soundtrack is done by Japanese Breakfast. You know, I'm a big fan of that band. And I feel like all of those elements are coming together to make for something that visually and atmospherically looks really lush and right up my street. And I just hope that it does have the gameplay to sustain that feeling for the whole duration, because, you know, it would be a shame if it fell down in that regard.
Yeah. I think it's like, I do love, we were talking about this before we started recording about it. There's kind of like an indie renaissance going on. Like, there was like 2013 had the massive, like, you know, like indie games got inducted into the MoMA or whatever it was. They were classified as art. There was that whole explosion around Roger Ebert saying that video games weren't art and all that kind of stuff. But what came out of that were loads of games like Gone Home and Papers, Please. And like, obviously people looking back to the likes of Braid and Limbo and everything. And I feel like indie's just sort of, there's obviously been tons of worthwhile titles, but it feels like this year especially, there's like this big explosion of like gorgeous indie games, and I feel like there's a lot more people are up for them, especially because the AAA stuff just hasn't been there, so like eyes have been on other things, I feel like the way that they've filled everything out has just been great.
Totally. I mean, we might even end up doing a dedicated podcast on this by the end of the year to round them all up, but I'm 100% with you. You know, in the absence of all of the AAA games that got pushed to February 2022 and March February 2022, these have really kind of not only just filled a gap, but kind of giving them the opportunity to have the spotlight in a way that they wouldn't previously. Like, mm-hmm. I certainly don't usually play the amount of indie games that I've played so far this year, mm-hmm. but I've really enjoyed spending time with them and, you know, diversifying across a bunch of different genres, a bunch of different art styles, a bunch of different stories. And I've found that most of the indies I've played this year have become some of my favorites of the entire year. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping games like Sable and a few other releases as we go into the final months managed to keep that momentum going, because it's just been such a joyous time, especially because so many of them are quite short as well. Mm-hmm. You know, coming off Skyward Sword, which we did a podcast about, and that bloated runtime, you know, coming off that and going straight in, into a run of shorter indies that are just like these pristine packages. And yeah, some of them might be 6s or 7s out of 10s, but they all leave an impact and they don't overstay their welcome. And that's what I've really appreciated about jumping between them all over the past few months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to add to that conversation, I'll very quickly mention The Artful Escape. I forget who developed that, but it's another Annapurna thing. And that is a game that is very much, like you said, a vibe game, where like the only real controls for it are moving the analog stick to the side and jumping around everywhere, but you're taking in these really gorgeous, like, you know, palette, like painterly sort of worlds with a really stunning soundtrack. There's also a button you can hold to just do guitar solos for as long as you want, which I held down the entire time. And then there's also a little, like, you do, like, you put a show on. It's about a musician who's trying to live up to ostensibly a Bob Dylan style folk singer, and nice. You realize that you'd rather rock it out and you'd rather do a brutal legend instead, and then you go on this sort of intergalactic journey to discover your sort of true calling. The Artful Escape is gorgeous. It's on Xbox on Game Pass, but that was a game that is absolutely a vibe game that I would just recommend. It's very like arty farty all over the place, but by the time I hit the end of it, I was glad I went on that journey. I would totally recommend it. Speaking of stuff for the rest of this week, though, this will be the shortest one, I think, because me and you, unless you have more of a reference point for it, I don't. Diablo 2 Resurrected is out on the 23rd of September. Try as I might, and I've tried 4 different times to get into Diablo 3, it is not my jam at all. Maybe more of a Diablo fan than me?
Not really, but I have a lot of nostalgia for Diablo 2. It was like maybe the first proper PC game I ever played, and maybe the last PC game I ever played properly. I really enjoyed it when I was young, but I can't remember much by it. Mm-hmm. And I was interested in it, especially because it's Vicarious Visions, I think.
Yeah.
They obviously have done some really good work on remasters and remakes previously with, you know, Tony Hawk's, with Crash Bandicoot and all that stuff. So I have no doubt that the game itself is going to be good. But for me personally, I don't know if I'm in a place to support Blizzard that way after...
Well, that's the whole other thing,
after all of the assault and harassment allegations that came out previously. And I was reading an interview, I think it was with one of the executives, who was essentially saying, like, look, it's up to you. Like, if you feel comfortable supporting us, then do it. If you don't, like, that's totally... all right, and I'm kind of just in a position where, you know, it's so raw, it's so recent, I'm not convinced by the changes that maybe they've committed to at the moment, that for me, it was one that I was excited for, but now I'm probably just going to, you know, let slide and maybe pick it up at some point in the future.
Yeah, I guess, like, with that whole stuff, that all the unfolding things on the Blizzard side is continually horrific. The more that comes out about even the history of their own company just seems to be, there's a lot of issues that have needed fixing for a long time. I guess if you can separate that from the nostalgic appeal of Diablo 2, it's maybe worth jumping into, but I feel like even on the game side, when they did that Warcraft 3 Reforged thing, it was such a tire fire. Yeah. And it went down so badly that I hope they've done the necessary work here, and it's not just like an upgrade, like a slightly upgraded port, and there's a bit more to it, to sort of reward the people who just want to play it as a video game and not to think about the wider ramifications of supporting that company. But you know.
I mean, that's a good point as well. You know, even if you could detach yourself from the allegations and stuff, you still have Blizzard's recent track record in terms of game quality, which, like you said, isn't great to begin with. You know, from a product standpoint, they've not been making all the right moves, and they've been pissing off fans for a while now. And they have said that Diablo 2 isn't going to be that. It's going to be them turning it around. But, you know, I guess we'll see.
We'll see. I mean, I think that's just something, like you said, for the old school, like the PC fans. A lot of people are like me, who didn't play Diablo until Diablo 3. That was like the big watershed moment, I feel, especially for console players, where it sort of came across.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Cross. Next one down is Lost Judgment, which is the sequel to 2017 or 2018's Judgment, which is another detective story with Takayuki Yagami. And it's rare that I'm not talking about the first Judgment, Josh Brown. The first Judgment is incredible. I love the Yakuza series. This might be the last one that they do, because there's a whole ongoing thing with the likeness of the dude and the actor's agency that owns that guy's face, not wanting him to be in games going forward because there's a PC version and they fear that the face might get out all over the PC on the internet and be used and it would take power away from them. It's a whole thing. But Lost Judgment just seems to be another really cool detective story style game with the Ryu Gagatoku's, like, the quirky little mini games they do. There's a skateboarding thing in this now. Yes. You can do ollies and grinds and spins, my friend.
God, Lord, man. Like, that's me in. I didn't know that until recently.
Yeah.
The fact that you can skateboard around town just sounds...
Well, there's a bit in the first one where he's on, like, a car chase and he hops on a skateboard to keep up with someone. And then he, like, does, like, an ollie and he kicks one leg off the side and boots this guy in the face. And then he uses that momentum to dart off back down a different street. But it's all in a cutscene. And you just sort of have to go with it because, oh, I guess he's just that good at skating in the middle of his detective duties. That's all fine. And then this time they're like, no, let's actually build this whole thing out and give you, like, skate parks and ways to get around the city on a skateboard and lots of Jack 2 style energy. So the thing, I saw Skillup's review saying that he wasn't a massive fan of it, but obviously across the board it's mostly quite positively received. We haven't got hands-on code with it. I'll be looking forward to it later this week, but I guess I can totally see the argument that the really quirky stuff jars with the even more brutal story they're doing. Like, the actual story setup is like this sort of body that's found in amongst like a house fire, and then it was actually placed there by like a serial killer, and it's all very, very brutal and bloody, and there's a lot, they don't really skimp on the details of the body that's found, kind of thing. And that's like, if you're in for these kind of games, it's kind of a bit of both. It's always really brutal violence followed up by karaoke sessions and dance mini games, and you know, you can go down the Sega arcade in game and play, you know, Outrun for 2 hours if you want to.
I mean, that weird mix has always been the thing that's really appealed to me about them. It's unfortunate that both of the games so far have released in kind of like a window where I've been really excited about other things. Like when Lost Judgment had its, you know, big PlayStation 5 trailer, you know, the other month, I remember looking at it and thinking, this looks awesome. Yeah. This is finally going to be the time that I jump in. And now I look at the slate of games I've got to play in September and I think, God damn it, it's going to mess me by yet again.
Well, they're so long as well. Like, I mean, you know, the original Judgment is sort of 25 to 30 hours-ish. And that depends on how much you want to get lost in the side stuff. A lot of the things get carried over from the Yakuza series. So for me, like, lifelong Yakuza fan, I've done a lot of those mini games. But one little point for Lost Judgment seems to be that they have tightened up a lot of the sort of arbitrary side stuff. Like, the original Judgment had a lot of tailing mini games and lock picking mini games and stuff that was just, it worked once you got all of those things unlocked. You could do them in quick succession. It just felt like a series of mini games. But the tailing mini game was like horrendous. It was just like hide here, wait 2 minutes. Guy looks around, NPC walks away. Okay, you can walk to the next cover point. It was just like proper mid-2000s stealth, and it was just like that stuff really dragged the game down. I know that the tailing stuff is in Lost Judgment, but apparently they've tightened it up so those sequences don't go on for as long. I will see if I can fit that in, because like you said, there's a lot of ridiculously long games this week.
I believe in you, Scott Tilford. If anyone who can fit this game in this week and over the next week, it's definitely you.
It's the power of the midnight till half two slot. That's a solid 2 hours every night to devote to whatever. Speaking of quirky things and mixes of different elements, though, Death Stranding Director's Cut is out on the 24th, which, Josh Brown, you've long said since the beginning that it was mentioned that you're going to do all 70 hours of this all over again.
Yes, man. Like, I've been looking for an excuse to replay Death Stranding, and I almost did it in the summer. But then there were all of the rumors that this, called the extended cut, might happen. Mm-hmm. So I put it off. And that patience has finally been rewarded with this mad director's cut, which is going to add a bunch of stuff that I'm not even going to use. But hopefully I'll get to replay it all again with, the widescreen, with the 4K with 60 frames per second.
Yes.
And I'm just looking forward to re-experiencing, for me, what is one of the best games of the entire last generation, just a bit more polished.
Definitely best playing. I'm totally with you. The initial, if anyone's not played Death Stranding, if you sort of like stayed away from it because it looked a bit too crazy, couldn't really get a handle on what tone it was going for, or whatever. The actual gameplay of it, for as divisive as I guess it was at the time, and I know that the director's cut has like sped some stuff up, or they've put more unlocks in, so there's less sort of arbitrary fetch questy stuff in terms of just walking place to place. You can get like, you can do stunt ramps, and you can like get a cargo cannon and fire stuff to the place that you're going to go to. That actual rollout of just getting through Death Stranding, when me, you, and Ben Roy were all playing through it, that's one of the most glorious times in my gaming career, to be honest. It's just a beautiful time of just what's around the corner, don't know, story's insane, but I've got these, what do you call those things that you latch onto rocks with, like a crimpet or something? You get some crimpets, and then you're going up the rocks and stuff. And I love all those unlocks. I thought the way that game rolls out, providing you can get on board with the basics of running around a lot. I guess you get vehicles eventually and stuff. But yeah, that game is such a crazy, unique thing. I wish it's story. I mean, I'm curious what the director's cut does to the story, if anything. I guess, like, what would you want from a return to Death Stranding? Are you just looking forward to like a more sort of spruced up version of what was already there?
Definitely, I just kind of want to experience it again, almost as it was. I'm a big fan of the mad stuff that they have added in, like the little robot helper that can, you can take a little lift on, or the stunt ramps where you can do stunts on them on your motorbike. But all of that, to me, while it's no doubt going to be fun, and I definitely will mess with it after I finished it, to me, the best way to play Death Stranding is in its OG form, where you have to methodically struggle and you have to methodically walk from one place to the other and kind of conquer the world around you, like that sense of maybe not the sense Kojima was going for, but the sense of kind of like conquering the environment and then building communities, building civilization,
or rebuilding
civilization. Yeah, it's true, rebuilding civilization, I guess, is probably the better way to put it, because you are kind of going to places that have been since destroyed. There used to be places there. Not the point. Well, it is the point. I'm not doing this very well.
No, I know what you mean. It's a lot of different ways to bring humanity together. The thing is, the first time you realize that you can contribute to a motorway that goes across the entire world, and maybe you'll just dump off a bunch of materials, and then someone else will bring in a bunch of different metals, and you'll just get told that thing you started 2 days ago is now finished. That's a lush feeling.
Yeah, and like I said before, I'm looking for a vibe game again, and I'm hoping that the story, because I know we kind of differ on this, you think it might be some of
just
the worst...
Ending.
Yeah, well, true. I was mostly there for the story. I will concede that it certainly has its absolutely mad and bad parts. Mm-hmm. But I remember the feeling that I got when I watched the first 2-hour cutscene, which just goes on forever. And I thought, for me, watching it for the first time, that was like one of the best directed cutscenes I'd seen. Like the stuff that Kojima did with the camera in that world to create tension, to create horror, to establish the universe was amazing. So I'm excited to see how that stuff holds up a second time round. And also, I'm kind of wondering whether the gameplay itself will hold up the second time around, because Metal Gear Solid 5 Phantom Pain is like one of my favorite games of the past gen. Like, I have such fond memories of playing that solid for a week in 8-hour stints, just like I played Death Stranding. Mm-hmm. But the issue is, every time I've gone back to Metal Gear Solid 5 to try and replay it and re-experience it in that way, it's never clicked in the same way again. Ooh. I've always bounced off after a few hours. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering whether I'll have the same issue here or whether I'll just be able to, you know, redo it as I did the first time around.
Well, that's the thing, because like both those games have such ramp ups, like you're unlocking so many different weapons or items or whatever. Like, especially in Death Stranding's case, like it starts out with you very much on the back foot. It's a slog. Like, you're meant to, it's intentional. Yeah. You're meant to feel like it's like you're dragging yourself across these places to reconnect the world and reconnect different people. And then there is that's the payoff. That like by the time you actually start building structures and, like I said, roads, and you actually start building out all the things that you have, different weapons and vehicles and stuff, then it kind of feels like you've become this delivery service. And it feels like you have more confidence and whatever, but that's such a slow build. Like, that's, yeah. I mean, Kojima himself said that people probably wouldn't like it for the first 20 hours. That was his, like, the quote that was doing the rounds on launch. And 20 hours is about when you hit, like, the sort of mid point of the whole map, I guess.
Yeah.
And we always said that we were in it from the beginning. It loses me story wise towards the end, because for me, it can't stick the landing. And I just ended up thinking back on the whole thing, just thinking, I don't know why I ever cared about any of this. But if you just focus on the gameplay, that stuff's great. All the communal stuff, all the strand ideas that he's had, all the different ways to make people work together. And he was saying about, you know, you carry all those lessons into real life and maybe you'll learn to work together in real life. And I love all that stuff. But all the stuff in regards to the story, the voice acting, just that whole bit with, is it Tommy Earl Jenkins or the Tommy Earl Haley, the dude at the end, the man with the mask on, giving the acting performance of his life in a context devoid space, and just going like, what's actually going on? Like, who are you? But I look forward to hopefully a bit more Death Stranding discourse, because the initial like release window conversations were great, and the stuff of the director's cut only just seems like it's more banter AF. So it seems like he's going down that route a bit more.
So banter, it's almost like Sony was like, please, Kojima, give us a director's cut. And he's kind of being like, well, no, but I'll give you this. You can say it's a director's cut. But then when you say it's a director's cut, I'll go on Twitter and be like, this isn't actually a director's cut. Undermine you in that way.
It's actually a director's plus. It's just that if you've played the original Death Stranding, the bit where Sam's, like Norman Reedus, whatever he's called, goes into, it's the Nicholas Winding Refn's place, the famous director, and he just does a little record scratch. He's running past the vinyl. They're a nice serious conversation about what he needs to do to bring the world back online, and then he just scratches a record and runs away. That's the mentality that this entire game seems to be built from the looks of it.
100%. And that's Scott Tilford, exactly what I want, because I love that bit. I loved all of the stuff with Nicholas Winding Refn.
Oh my god, it's him, Guillermo del Toro. It's just Kojima's mind laid out. The next two things are sort of expansions or reworks of stuff that's already out, but Outer Wilds Echoes of the Eye is out on the 28th. I've not followed this at all, because I didn't click with Outer Wilds whatsoever. I bounced the hell off that thing, like you do when you're trying to fly the satellite, the ship itself. But you're a massive Outer Wilds fan, and this seems to be like some really worthwhile expansion to it.
Oh my lord, Scott Tilford, I can't wait for this. But this will be a short one, because they've essentially not said anything about it. Like, the whole point of this expansion essentially is that they want you to go in knowing as little as possible, because obviously most of the satisfaction from the Outer Wilds itself as the regular game came from the sense of unknown and learning how this solar system worked and the secrets of each planet. Apparently this is going to be, well, it's an expansion, so it's going to be more than a DLC. They have said that, and they've promised it's going to be more complex in a kind of microcosm than the original game was, or just as deep. And that's what I'm looking forward to. They've also bigged up some of the horror elements. So yeah, I didn't even realize this was out so soon, but it's coming out for PlayStation. So I'm going to play it on that, and I'm going to jump in, hopefully knowing as little as possible and have just as good of a time as I did the first time around, man. Because Jesus Christ, Scott Tilford, was that first time around in the first game good? You know, you used to do chatty faces before when on hiatus. Mm-hmm. And for me, if we ever had the question again of which game would you wipe your mind to play
fresh,
you
can do it again.
It'd be Outer Wilds, man. Outer Wilds every time, and I love it every time.
Oh my god, I every time. Because the thing is, there's two types of people on this earth. The people like you who are enlightened, who've seen it, who know what the thing is, and go, oh my god, you need to experience this thing. And it's like an amalgamation of all the different ways that that game saves up content. You just bounce into it in whatever order, and it works. That didn't work for me at all, and I just don't know what the thing is. But I did like, in terms of like space horror, like you're saying, they're sort of maybe putting more horror elements in it going forward. I do like that planet that you can go to, because you obviously just like explore whenever you want, but you can go to one of those planets and you go inside it, and there's like a huge like Cthulhu style beast just living in there. And yes. Like me, when I was exploring, not knowing anything to find, and like assuming, because it's like fairly low budget or it's quite a small team, that like there's not gonna be that much in there, and then this giant set of jaws just comes out the shadow and grabs me from like the face. I was like, oh my god, I freaked the hell out. That was one of the best like dynamic jump scares ever. Yeah. Like that was insane. And I feel like, I mean, even No Man's Sky did a random horror pack for like, if you're just out, you can find these derelict vessels that have creatures on them and stuff. And I feel like there's like a nice strand of like dynamic horror where you don't know exactly what you're getting, and I feel like space horror lends itself perfectly to that.
Well, that's exactly it, man. Like, I mean, Outer Wilds, you know, even though the first one had a horror elements, you know, so much of that horror just came from, you know, almost like existentialism of you figuring out the secrets of the universe, you know, looking beyond the pale and not liking what you see. So hopefully if that kind of feeling is distilled for this expansion, it's going to serve up more of those moments like you mentioned there, where you get like these jaw-dropping surprises that scare you as well, which is...
I think I want more of them, like, just in general.
I wish I could almost like play Outer Wilds for you all the way through to just show you, kind of know what you're missing, but what I got out of it.
I would totally, I would 1,000,000% take that, because all my Outer Wilds experience was doing the tutorial, taking off in that little ship, bouncing off stuff, just bouncing off planets, trying to land, failing, going to that one where the water keeps rising and getting shot off back into space, and just going like, I'm not getting anything from this, and I don't know what to do in it, and the game's just sort of going like, well, there's a lot of stuff here, isn't there? You should clearly be getting this. And I'm just like, I'm not at all. But I really, really want to. And also those devs, I forget the name of the dev team, unless you know off the top of your head, the geniuses. Those people, though, they are like absolute geniuses. Like the whole thing with Outer Wilds universe is that it is scientifically accurate to a physics model of our universe, but like condensed down. Like was like a whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it is like the amount of work that went into just like the physics of it is crazy. I think Daniel Dwyer did a NoClip documentary on the creation of it that I watched after I finished it last year. And there's a bunch of other similar kind of like dives into how the devs made it. But I remember that one was just like great, like provided so much insight into just, you know, the sleepless nights that went into this small team, making sure everything worked together. Like, I think that game's a miracle, man. And any more of it is something I'll welcome with open arms. Like, give me a full sequel if that isn't too much trouble.
I wonder if they'll do, or if they already mentioned, a next-gen upgrade thing. Because I, like the visuals of it, obviously, like, part of it is getting lost in that sort of, like, you know, like distant space horror thing. Like, it's sort of, like, you can see different planets you want to go to. Everything is nearly always visible. But, yeah, I wonder if they would, like, up the performance of it so you could sort of take it in a bit faster. And I don't know. I just want to know what it is. I want to know what the thing is. You've discovered the thing, and it seems beautiful, but I don't know what the thing is. So maybe someday I'll get back to it. Last thing is that Ghost Runner is getting its next-gen update. Ghost Runner, one of the most brutal games of the last sort of 10, 11 years, literally reminded me of Super Meat Boy in terms of just, like, you are dead, you are back to the start, do it again. Like, we're not checkpointing you. We're just going to kick you in the face until you get this right. And that game's getting its PS5/series update on the 28th, which I got through, I don't know, 2-3 worlds of it. I forget how many there are in total. I got a good few hours into it, though, but that game, I know you've not played it, but that game is just, it's just so relentless. Like, you will either learn how to deflect and, you know, bounce back 3 or 4 bullets whilst wall running, whilst cutting some dude's head off, whilst air dodging, all in one big, beautiful movement, or you'll just keep dying. And then, like, you know, eventually you'll hit the ceiling with it eventually, where I was like, I can't devote the time to, like, learn every single thing. And the runs were longer and whatever. But yeah, what's your thoughts on the old Ghost Runner?
Well, Scott Telford, when this... I've said your full name a lot on this podcast. I hope everyone clicked it.
Tell me what you think, Josh Brown.
I didn't know anything about this game until you played it last year. Like, it was not on my radar at all. Mm-hmm. But ever since you have introduced me to it, I've been waiting patiently for the next-gen version because I was so interested in that concept that you just described there. And the brutality of that concept seems right up my street. That I know, I think, anyway, that you've kind of fixed the launch issues that it had.
Oh, yeah.
On PS4 and Xbox One and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it actually is free, I think. Well, quote unquote free on
the next gen thing
now.
Yeah.
But I've been waiting patiently for the proper next gen version to properly jump in. Mm-hmm. And this is the time. So hopefully to balance out the cosiness of Sable and the kind of winding methodicalness of Death Stranding. I'll have this piss hard game to just smash my head into a wall for a little bit. That's my plan.
The thing is, with them updating the frame rates and everything, that will help massively with the amount of stuff that you're just trying. And the higher resolution, it's literally, I mean, you're literally dodging multiple pixels of bullets coming at you that travel in like, they're with you in like three frames. Like, it's just sort of, but you need to like parry. I think like this is one of the games where a next gen update is one of the most fundamental enhancements to the core of it, like overall anyway. And also just if you're a Synthwave fan, if you're a Synthwavesman like myself, then Daniel Deluxe, who's like one of the best like top tier god tier synth men, has done the entire soundtrack. And even if you're not a Ghost Runner fan, or it just kicks your face off too much, then get the soundtrack anyway, because Daniel Deluxe's work for this is genuinely incredible. So yeah, the next week of stuff seems crazy. We'll check back in next Monday on the other side of all these different things, and even by tomorrow we'll know what absolute state Kane is in, so we might do a follow-up news video or whatever else. But for now, this has been the wind-up. Hopefully you're suitably wound up for the week. Ivan Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you all next week. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.